Welcome to Sensational Information, an exploration of our senses and how we learn. This is Ann Cunningham, tactile artist and art teacher at the Colorado Center for the Blind. In preparation for my exhibition at the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau, Wisconsin, in December 2015, I'm talking to people about ways we can access information. Because if we can make information accessible, I think we should. Today, I will be talking to Dr. Simon Hayhoe. I am interested in talking to him because of the research he's been conducting that explores how cultural beliefs shape people's understandings and attitudes about what they expect from themselves as well as others. Simon, could you please introduce yourself and tell us how you've been researching these issues?
My name is Dr. Simon Hayhoe. I'm from Canterbury in Kent, which is in the UK, and Canterbury as in the Chaucer and Canterbury Tales. I'm a senior lecturer at Canterbury Christ Church University, and I lecture in the School of Childhood and Education Sciences. And I'm also a Centre Research Associate in the Centre for Philosophy of Natural Social Science at the London School of Economics, which isn't too far, luckily enough. I've been researching blindness and art and blind people's art and why blind people create and paint and are imaginative for probably 21 years now, since, well, 22 years this year. 1993 is when I did my first project. I've written 3 books on the subject and several articles, and I've lectured in 3 different countries. Back in 2011, I was also a Fulbright scholar. I was doing a research project at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, understanding how blind people understood paintings and why blind people wanted to visit art galleries. So that's really my motivation. Over 20 years ago now, I was looking at my first book. I started looking at art studios and particularly adults who'd never painted or drawn before, and they were completely blind. And they'd been to schools for the blind and had negative expectation put on them. And they'd never realised that there was such a thing called art. It had not been taught to them. And I felt this was unusual because I was just looking at how people understood art within a normal context. And it just happened to be I was in an art studio with a group of adults with a bunch of disabilities. And it turned out that there was a group of blind students who had absolutely no experience. So I thought to myself, well, this is unusual because how can you have absolutely no experience of art? And what does it mean to have no experience of art? Because as a sighted person brought up in a sighted world, I couldn't understand that myself. And there were other blind people in the class who had the same levels of blindness, yet because they'd been blind later in life, they had masses of experience of art. And so that was unusual to me, that the people who were doing art, if you like, who were blind, had plenty of experience of art previously and thought there was no problem or no issue in them doing or having an experience of art after they were blind. And this was a big difference between those people who were very blind from birth or blind from very young age. And I thought that there must be some problem. There must be some problem with our education system, because it's actually teaching children at a very young age that they can't actually experience art. So I looked at, after that, people who were successful and who were blind at becoming painters and people who were draftsmen and draftswomen and sculptors. And I wanted to find out why they, rather than the people who'd had no experience of blindness, could do art and had this feeling that they could do art, and also understand how a blind person can understand art. And that led me into many years of research. It ended up in a looking at a verbal imaging at the Metropolitan Museum of Art back in 2011. And what I found was that blind people can create analogies. And this isn't just in traditional visual arts. It's also in computer programming, because another study I did, which was parallel to my previous studies of art, was looking at how blind people understood a two-dimensional interface. Now, this was something that was particular to me, because everyone understands the blind, or lots of people think anyway, that blind people can't understand art. I've never understood that position, but many people do have that understanding. And it does tend to get into our teaching, and it tends to get into our theorization about blind people as well. But I'd always understood that blind people could program computers. And there'd never been any dispute about this, because this was almost a traditional job that blind people could actually undertake. So I thought to myself, why is it then that we think that blind people can program computers, but they can't paint and draw? Even though, if you think about it, computer interfaces are far less tactile, are far less three-dimensional than an artwork, than a piece of sculpture, than a painting. And again, it comes down to cultural understanding and cultural background. Give the word art, the word visual, and suddenly you think, oh, blind people automatically can't do it. Give the word interface to a computer, and people think, oh, well, of course, blind people can understand them. But there was a very interesting part of computer programming as well that I found out, that in the old days, of course, we used to code with plain code. Nowadays, we code with visual code. And as soon as we added that word visual computer programming to programming, everyone then suddenly thought that blind people couldn't program. And so in a study I conducted, I found that people who'd lost their sight from a very young age, again, who'd been to schools for the blind, again, couldn't or thought that they couldn't understand visual computer imagery, and started not producing visual computer programs, if you like. Whereas people who became blind later in life still thought that they could produce computer programs and computer interfaces as they had when they had sight. There were a couple of people who didn't think that way. I mean, there are some blind people who do actually program visually, and they have been blind from birth, but they're very rare cases. And of course, as we know, people like Eshref Armaghan are cases of people who can, or who believe they can, certainly paint and draw, and certainly produce very good, very imaginative pieces. And these are pieces that a sighted person would struggle to create sometimes. And we understand that it is actually possible for a blind person to actually paint and draw. So why is it that some people go through life believing they can't? And in some cases, I found, were even afraid of touching clay when they were put into art studios, first of all, because they'd never been exposed to art education. So I looked at the motivations, because that became fascinating to me. I broke into two strains of research. The first one was looking at the philosophy of why we believe blind people can't understand visual imagery. And the second piece is that I looked into was, why do blind people who are blind from birth believe they can paint and draw or create a computer program? And funnily enough, the only examples I could find either hadn't had education when they're younger, as in the case of Eshref Armaghan, who actually used drawing in three dimensions, that is drawing with clay and drawing by scratching a pencil or a stick into a cardboard image to actually make a raised line, if you like. They'd actually used art to understand the world because they had no other form of education. He didn't just want to understand the tactile world. He wanted to also understand the visual world as well. So he'd scratched in outlines of images. But then he wanted to know, well, everyone was describing through language, there's a mountain over there, there's a piece of water over there, there's a tree over there. And if you look at a tree, it looks smaller in the background than it does in the foreground. Now, to a blind person such as him, he wouldn't have understood that concept, so he asked it to have explained to him. And he had explained through language, he could then understand it as an imaginative and an abstract concept, just as we do when we're learning to draw and we're taught about perspective. And this is where, for example, instruments like your perspective machine, your perspective tool comes in, where you're actually explaining to people about perspective. And this is just a normal process that a sighted person would go through. And so because of that, he was starting to understand the world around him in a visual realm. Because, of course, blind people, as everyone else, live in a visual culture. And they want to understand the realm of the language that's used around them. So he was trying to just make sense of his world through art. And as all people are doing. So in a way, we learn about art as well through the way that blind people learn about art, because they're just trying to make sense of their world and we're trying to make sense of our world through art. One of the things I do in my lectures as well, and if you look at the PowerPoint, that if we have a link to the PowerPoint, is I always start when I teach my students about creativity, imagination and play. And again, I don't specifically refer to just blindness and just creativity by blind people, sculptures and drawings and paintings by blind people. I refer to all forms of sculpture and painting and drawing. But when I try and teach students about this, I always start off with a question. What is possible for people to understand? And I always show them the first picture in that PowerPoint, which is a picture of two paintings by Ezra Farmigan. And I start off by showing them there's a painting with fish playing a violin. And then I show them a picture of a mountain scene with a mountain in the background, a lake, two houses, a small house behind a larger house, showing what we call in visual art foreshortening. And I ask them, well, if you were to show this to a blind person, how would a blind person understand it? And many of my students think, well, to start off with, you get the normal response, which is, and it's completely fair because, you know, this isn't against my students, certainly, because anyone would say it if they had no experience of this field. Well, I don't know. Maybe I could explain a fish to a blind person because they may have felt a fish. They may have felt water, so I could explain the water. They may have understood a butterfly or a flower because they felt and experienced and smelt those. But I would have trouble explaining the colours to this person. I would have trouble explaining the mountain gets smaller the further away you see it. I would have trouble explaining that there's a house, a smaller house behind a bigger house, but it's still the same size, it's just perspective. But of course, then I do the big reveal and I show that this is actually by a blind person. And this is where my students become very surprised. And then we start our discussion about what is it really possible for anyone to achieve in art? Because the first response my students usually give me when they first walk into my class is, oh, I'm not creative. I can't do the project because I can't create. No one's creative, or these people over here are creative, but I'm not creative. And the first thing I say to them is, everyone's creative. It's a bit like saying you don't have a nose or you don't have eyes. Everyone is creative. You have those things. You know, whether you use them to see or smell is your business, but you are creative. You may not realize it, but you just have those things. And so it's how we use our understanding of creativity and what we were taught that we were, how we were taught we weren't creative because maybe we pencil drew when we were younger and it didn't look exactly like the object it was supposed to look at. So people then say, oh, well, you're not that good at art, maybe, or they're supposed to be. So you're not that creative. So what I try and teach is that everyone could be imaginative. For example, Ezra wasn't taught about fish playing violins. He just has in his own mind fish playing violins. He didn't have the lake and the mountain in the background and the figurative imagery in that painting as part of his understanding of his teaching. He wasn't taught that painting exactly. He imagined that painting. So if a person who's never seen before, who was born without any form of light perception whatsoever, can imagine that in his brain, well, then why can't sighted people imagine similar things in their brain? Everyone is imaginative. Everyone is creative. Well, I think the root of art, and lots of people have discussed and philosophized about why we paint, why we draw, what is the point of art? I think this has gone back to the ancient Greeks. I mean, it's a big question. But for me, art is a way of understanding our world. We shouldn't be restricted by thinking, am I doing art well? Am I being a creative person? Am I being creative enough? Because these are things that have been trained into us when we're children. These are things we've been trained into even before we go to school. You're good at art, you're bad at art. That either looks like something or it doesn't look like something if you're drawing or painting something. It doesn't matter whether it looks or it doesn't look like something. When you're playing, you're just rehearsing your life. You're just building up an image of the world around you in your life. And the same thing is creative activity. You don't actually need to be able to paint or draw. You can make anything. As I try with my students, I try to get them to do self-portraits that aren't actually drawings, that are based on their memories. So, for example, our Full Senses project gets them to think about memories from when they were children, gets them to think about the smells they had, the taste they had, the sounds they heard, the touch that they remember, their favourite form of touch. And they come in and they bring in tactile objects and objects that smell and objects that taste in a certain way that remind them of their childhood. And I think this is all about, this is what art is. It's remembering who you are. It's building up your own personality. It's understanding the culture around you. It's understanding who you are as a person. And I think this is why art is a very powerful tool, not only as a way of displaying yourself on a wall, saying this is who I am, or displaying yourself in the gallery and saying this is what I've made. But in particular, it's a way of thinking about who you are in terms of yourself. It's intrapersonal intelligence, as you would say, in terms of multiple intelligences, as well as being interpersonal intelligence, communicating who you are and communicating who you want to be. It doesn't matter if you're any good at it in certain ways, in inverted commas. You know, if you're communicating yourself, you're communicating yourself. It doesn't matter whether someone understands that perfectly. You're still making that communication. You're still putting that thought across.
Thank you, Simon. Your work inspires me, so much so that I asked my art class at the Colorado Center for the Blind to make some self-portraits. I've posted 3 short video clips of these students talking about their experience. Simon, thanks again for sharing your ideas and insights with us. If you are interested in learning more about Dr. Hayhoe's work, you can follow the links posted on this blog. Thanks for joining us. Music is by Mike Jorgensen. You can sign up for updates at sensationalbooks.com.